It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate joining us for the program here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt joins us from San Antonio, Texas. It is Media Day across the NBA as the teams return, get training camp started, and preseason basketball just around the corner. Monday, October the 2nd, first Celtics preseason game as they take on Charlotte Hornets. You can hear all Celtics games here on WKXL this season. And the Life with Matt Bonner, powered today by Revision Energy. What can sunshine do for you? Check out their team of local solar professionals by going to revisionenergy.com. Welcome in now, Matt Bonner. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? I love the sponsor per our conversation last week. Contributing to less global warming and hopefully less frequent strong hurricanes, right?
Right. We want less hurricanes because, again, another hurricane, obviously, as you were talking about last week, ended up hitting Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the situation is even more dire down there right now than the last time we talked.
Yeah, 4 to 6 months without power on the island of Puerto Rico. Can you imagine? Just put yourself in their shoes. Imagine not having electricity for 4 to 6 months, how you would survive, how it would change your daily activities, your daily life. It's scary, and it's getting overshadowed on the news by a lot of stuff politically and in the sports world, which I'm sure we'll touch on some of that in the show today. But the mayor's down there just pleading like for help. So hopefully that message gets through all the distractions that we've been seeing in the sports world, and people will reach out and help and do what's needed to get that island back on its feet, because it is a territory of the United States of America. Those are Americans down there, believe it or not. So hopefully they get the support they need.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of individuals are saying that athletes and people like Matt Bonner should just focus on sports, but perhaps the President of the United States should focus on being president and helping the people of Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and focus on what matters right now and creating more division in the sports world and also creating more division in our world in regards to race relations. I don't think that's something that the President of the United States should be involved in. If anything, he should be bringing people together. Should be having Colin Kaepernick and Steph Curry come and join him so they can discuss some of the things that need to be addressed in our communities across the nation. I mean, that's what presidents do. That's what they've done through the course of time. When there is need for healing and racial inequality, generally is the president's role to bring people together as opposed to stoke division for political gain. And I'm not a huge fan of individuals taking a knee during the national anthem, but guess what? The freedom that we have in this country that our members of the armed forces have sacrificed for us to have allows for individuals to speak up. And there's been a lot of discussion about whether athletes are the best people to be doing. Obviously, they've been able to achieve the American dream. They're multimillionaires. Why is life so bad for them? But to me, you're right. Those folks are right. The optics are not great. But if there is an injustice and an inequality taking place in our country and you don't see it being addressed, well, then it is your job to step up, irregardless of how good America may have been to you. And speak out for the individuals who don't have a voice. And that, to me, is a positive utilization of celebrity.
Yeah, wow, you just jumped right in. I love it. First of all, with respects to the president trying to be divisive with his comments on the NFL and the players taking a knee subject. I think you're absolutely right. I respect the flag, America, the office, but it does seem in poor taste and not the best, probably the best leadership decision to focus on something that's divisive when there's way bigger fish to fry. That is part of your job description. You know, the hurricane relief stuff, obviously North Korea, tons of other stuff. Not going to list it all. So to kind of be sticking your nose in where it doesn't belong with the purpose of dividing people doesn't seem like it makes sense. And you're right, I agree with you. I also would not personally take a knee during a national anthem. However, I think most people understand and respect, we live in a country where you're free to do so. You have the freedom to do so. And I don't think the players that are taking a knee are trying to disrespect the flag or the country. I don't think we don't respect this country. We don't want to be a part of it. I think it's more to draw attention to various, you know, whatever social issue, equality issue that is, you know, whether you like it or not, a problem in this country. And it is the American dream to make millions of dollars and make it to the NFL. But, you know, the players, A, had to work their butts off to get there, and B, which you know, that's the American dream. You work your butt off.
Right.
You get success, good things happen. But what they're trying to show is, like, a lot of the communities where these guys come from, it the odds are stacked against them. And, you know, whether it's in the justice system, the prison system, the socioeconomic system, the school system, there's a lot of things where the American dream is far more elusive than it probably should be. And, you know, that treatment, I think, is what they're trying to bring attention to, and try to, it's an issue that I think always needs improvement upon. And by taking a knee, you're achieving your goal because now people are talking about it. So I commend athletes with the bravery to, if you have something you feel that strongly about, to be able to risk yourself and your career and your profession and put it on the line to draw attention to something that's bigger than you and yourself, that I commend that. And I tip my hat to all athletes that do that. You know, the NBA's done stuff like that, you know, when the players would come out in warm-ups with the black shooting shirts to draw attention to some of the racial issues in this country. I think the more people think about and have dialogue about these types of issues, it helps create process, that communication, that dialogue. I think it's important. So I think that's great. You know, and I think for the president of the United States to tell people they should be fired for doing this or fans should boycott the league, it's just not his place. Like I said, bigger fish to fry.
Right. And, you know, I think that we are, you know, obviously in, you know, interesting times. And the president, when there is inequality that exists or individuals who are upset, should act as a uniter, an individual who brings people together. But instead, he seeks to divide with this, and not just, you know, divide for his own political purposes, but divide fan bases, like Patriots fans booing their own, boycotting their team as a result of the president not just, you know, dividing along racial lines, but also pitting, trying to use the flag and our country to pit individuals against those who have served in the military, which to me is wrong. I don't think that Donald Trump is one to lecture anybody, in my view, about what the flag means. And
I know. Yeah.
In concluding, just on this point, to me, individuals who have served in the military, many of them African American, many of them even before they were viewed as being equals under the eyes of the law in our country. Hispanics, homosexuals, everyone of different races, religions, and creeds did so under the belief that America is the greatest country in the world because of the freedoms we have, because of the ability to speak out against injustice and to do things that may not necessarily be popular at the time, but to do so with the under the guise of freedom. Our flag is what those individuals fought for. Those ideals are what they fought for. So I don't see how exercising the rights that we have that make this country so great is in any way trying to devalue the service and sacrifice of individuals who have worn the uniform.
Yeah, and on a just a very base human character level, when you look at those comments or tweets, whatever, if you're going to talk the talk, you've had to have walked the walk. You know, just kind of to your point earlier, you have to be qualified in life to be able to say things like that and have them hold any type of credence in my mind. That's one of the things with Colin Kaepernick who kind of started this whole thing. He walks the walk. You know, the social issues he's drawing attention to, or was drawing attention to with his original protest, he really works hard at improving and goes out in the community and gives time, money, effort to help these causes. So, on the flip side, if you're going to talk smack on the other side, you kind of have to walk the walk on that end in order to have credence or I don't know why I can't think of the word here, credibility,
right.
You know what I mean? And then also to kind of attack the NBA in the same manner and take aim at Steph Curry was pretty, I read Steph Curry's quotes and he said it was surreal to see like his name in a tweet attacking him from the president of the United States. And it's, I agree, in a million years, did you ever think you would see that? I mean, how many people have not gone to the White House after a championship or teams in the history of this country? I'm sure it's happened plenty of times before.
Sure, Tim Thomas didn't go with the Bruins, and Tom Brady didn't go the last time.
Yeah, just with the Patriots a couple months ago, it happened in nothing. But now, for some random reason, he's going to go after the sweetheart, the darling of the NBA, Steph Curry. It's just almost comical.
Well, I mean, I am not one to to tell and to determine what's in a person's heart and what they feel about things. But, you could certainly draw a line and figure out why he went after Steph Curry and why he went after Colin Kaepernick and why he went after all these African-American NFL players who are protesting. And again, Tom Brady decided not to go to the White House. He said he had a family obligation, and certainly that's believable. And I don't want to question Tom Brady's credibility in regards to that. But, he made the decision not to go. Robert Kraft and Tom Brady both distanced themselves from the president on this. And he has not yet responded in regards to that either. And, getting back to Donald Trump's credibility, this is a person who attacked John McCain for his military service and said that McCain wasn't a war hero because he didn't like people who were captured. And that's not just going after John McCain, that's going after every single POW and also devaluing their service and potentially inhibiting future individuals from serving based upon a devaluation of the institution. So this to me is ridiculous. And there are so many other things to be focused upon, but if the president brings all these people into the fray, and the people have said, why are the NFL guys talking about this? This I just want them to focus on football. Well, that's not going to happen. If a person's been attacked and they've been called an SOB, They're not going to...
By the president?
By the president of the United States. They're not just going to... as I've said before, I am not comfortable saying that on the air. I'm not. I'm not comfortable saying what the president of the United States said on the air. I mean, that's crazy to think about that. And that we have gone... The moral equivalence is just gone out the window. It's sad. Hopefully something will come from this, but it seems like everyone is kind of going into their own, silos on this, and there's not going to be necessarily a discussion. I think in the locker rooms, in the Patriots locker room and other locker rooms across the NFL and other sports, there'll be a discussion about this, but other people are just Patriots fans who are just filled with hate about the prospect of these individuals having the audacity to stand up against inequality.
Yeah, I think that's the huge miss there is I don't think, in my heart, it's not about disrespecting America and the flag. It's about raising attention to an issue. That's what it's about. And if people can't get past that, then all they see is people kneeling, disrespecting the flag and their country, and they get stuck on that. And I think it's important to have the awareness and open-mindedness to realize what they're doing and why they're doing it, and think about it. You know what I mean? And that's if you do that, then hopefully a light bulb goes off and it clicks, and you understand the fact that this can happen in this country without people getting arrested or fired like Donald Trump wants is really a great thing. It means it's freedom.
Right. And, to me, they're saying that we could do better, basically. They're not saying they don't love America. They're saying, we can do better than we're doing right now in regards to equality. And I think that that's fair. And I think there needs to be, a dialogue and engagement in actually, helping and affecting these issues. And I think that we are going to see that. But there's just so much division and hatred at the grassroots of our country right now that it seems like everyone's kind of tuning one another out. And, we'll see how this progresses moving forward. Donald Trump has doubled down. NASCAR owners are saying that they would fire individuals if they protest, any driver or crew member. Meanwhile, Dale Earnhardt Jr. quoted JFK today and said that if you start to not allow peaceful protests, that is how violence rises. Which I didn't expect Dale Earnhardt Jr. to come out and be like the one of the great voices of the movement of equality that we're seeing from NFL players. But he has a really good point. To me, again, the individuals who have died for our country and made that ultimate sacrifice did so that individuals can speak up and can protest in a peaceful fashion. And it's not, in any way, in my view, a denigration of their service. It's an affirmation of the service. That fact that we are a country where this is allowed, where you're not, jailed or fired for having beliefs that may be contrary to public opinion or that of your president. And to have a president act in a fascist way and demand that employers fire individuals for expressing, their beliefs is quite against the foundation of our country.
I mean, especially in these times, leadership should be working to unite people, to create love, support among everybody so that everybody can work together to improve these issues, to improve our country, instead of, dividing and fanning the flames. It's really disheartening. To see, in my opinion.
Well, that is Matt Bonner. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Revision Energy. When we return, we'll head to the New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun, where they held their last playoff race for the foreseeable future, the playoff race moving to Las Vegas. And then we'll go in-depth with the Red Sox, Xander Bogaerts, Drew Pomeranz join us on the show, and the great Jim Palmer, Hall of Fame pitcher, on what he has seen this season and an historic season for Chris Sale. We'll come back with more here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association and the Concord Capitals. Now is the time to get your youngsters signed up for hockey. Check out ConcordYouthHockey.org. It's been an incredible experience for my son, Brennan, and I encourage you to get your son or daughter signed up as well. Again, ConcordYouthHockey.org. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. NASCAR hit the New Hampshire Motor Speedway in Loudoun. It was a pretty dominant performance from Kyle Busch. So he was the beneficiary of a wreck on lap 150 that took out then race leader Martin Truex Jr. for the time being. Truex Jr. would end up finishing fifth. Kyle Busch and Truex had the best cars throughout the day. Kyle Larson was strong as well. He ended up finishing second. We hear from both of those drivers right now as we start with Kyle Busch in victory lane. Congratulations to Kyle Busch. He takes the checkered flag here at New Hampshire. Came in on the pole, so you had to feel pretty good about your chances here today. How did it come together for you?
Just execution. You know, we were just able to do our job and do everything right. We were able to keep ourselves up front all day long and race with the 78 car for a little while, and then the race with the 20, we kind of held him off there through the middle, late stages of the race, and good pit strategy and good pit calls in order to keep the car handling right and keep it up front.
Kyle Larson said he saw you and the 78 being pretty much equal throughout the course of the day. Is that the way you felt it as well? The wreck obviously separated things?
Yeah, the 78 was a little bit ahead of us there that first run. We just weren't quite right, and then we made some adjustments to the car, got it way better, and we were able to keep up with them there for that second run. And I was right on them a couple times trying to make a move in traffic, but just couldn't quite get it done. And then obviously they had their issues there at the end of the second stage, so we didn't have to race them much after that. But you know, fortunately for us, we stayed out of trouble and got the job done.
How did you stay out of trouble in the wreck on lap 150? It seemed like you just literally skirted through it along the side wall, a back wall, obviously, and the wreck itself. How did you avoid it?
It was just there was a car in front of me. You know, all I saw was smoke, so I was just slowing down, checking up, trying to get stopped, and then there was a car in front of me that was just kind of squeaking through there real slow, and he made it through the hole. So I was like, okay, that tells me there's enough room, I can make it through. So just kind of followed through real slow, real smooth, and you know, didn't touch anything. So that was good.
When you see just smoke, what is that like for you mentally? When you don't, obviously, can't see in front of you, don't know what's going on, what kind of clicks in for you?
Basically, hopefully they're not there when I get there, right? You know, that they're still moving a little bit. And my spotter was telling me the track was blocked in the middle, but it was more middle high. And fortunately, there was just enough room to get through.
How do you feel this kind of sets you up for a championship? Obviously, you're on to the round of 12. This is a track you've done well at in the past. Do you feel this sets you up well?
Yeah, I mean, any win obviously helps you and gets you through to the next round. We don't have to worry about Dover next week, but although we got real fast cars and we've been real fast there over the years. So I like going to Dover. That's a good place for us. And then, you know, we reset and go into the next round. So for us, it's just all about trying to build our cushion with these bonus points, these stage wins, and these race wins in order to get ourselves, you know, a better cushion.
Rowdy, congratulations.
Thank you.
Kyle Larson finished second in Sunday's race.
Did you feel like the 18 was the best car today, or was he just a beneficiary?
Thanks. Well, I thought the 78 and the 18 were fairly equal, and then on the long runs, I felt like I was better than them, but on short runs, they were quite a bit better than us. So, I don't know. I think those two cars have been a little bit better than us for the last couple months, but we've still been working hard at it.
Do you feel like you're right there in terms of being able to win a championship based upon this finish? And as you said, you have been right there with those teams.
Yeah, I feel like we're championship contenders. We just got to keep the good runs going, keep the consistent runs going, and we should make it the homestead.
Finally, how difficult is, you know, this track in terms of patience on a day like this? It's hot, obviously, and it's difficult to pass here. Was it difficult to kind of maintain that patience, that consistency to get to that second place finish?
Yeah, I mean, patience is a big thing here. You know, I guess you can't get too excited on restarts and stuff, put yourself in a bad spot, you know, at this point in the playoffs, you know. So, you know, I think the earlier in the year when nothing's really on the line, you can be more aggressive. But for the guys in the playoffs, you got to be, you know, safe and consistent.
Jimmy Johnson spent some time at Lowe's in Concord prior to the big race weekend. And one of the cool things about seeing you interact with the fans is all the young kids. And obviously that's huge for NASCAR moving forward. But it was just interesting to see how inspired the kids were by you.
Yeah, I think I'm a big kid at heart, so I don't know if there's some kind of mutual vibe that we pick up off of one another, but I truly enjoy the moments I get hanging out with kids. I'm a father of two, and I honestly fell in love with racing by going to the track with my dad. My dad was a huge fan of motorsports, and you know, there's something there that I can remember being in the kids' shoes and I would walk in and see these racers, and some I knew, some I didn't, but still, it was a race car driver. My eyes would light up.
And each kid, you know, falls in love with cars. Like when they're 1, 2 years old, they're pushing the car around, and they kind of make that jump through time. When did you start racing seriously? And, you know, at what point do you recommend kids getting started?
Well, every kid has their own journey. I grew up in a family that raced motocross and dirt bikes, so I did that until kind of my mid-teens, and then found my way into an opportunity to race an off-road buggy. I started very early on dirt bikes, but I've seen guys start later on dirt bikes. I've seen kids start real young in cars. You know, it just really depends on the opportunities at hand and that are there. But I think the most important thing is just to follow a passion that you're into. And I know racing isn't all that affordable. My parents really struggled to make ends meet and take me to race my dirt bikes. And I had to count and rely on team owners and sponsorship to get me onto four wheels.
How do you think NASCAR can change that aspect of things? Obviously, there's been a look at diversity and bringing in different ethnicities of people from cities into NASCAR. But do you think there's something that can be done in regards to the affordability for the working class family to try to get a kid into racing?
I really wish there was. I mean, there's no way around it. The vehicles are expensive, as far as gender or race. It's just difficult for anyone to grow up with a car sitting around in the backyard to drive. And I feel very fortunate in the area that I grew up in, Southern California. I had hills nearby and deserts on the other side of that. And ironically, I did have a dirt bike sitting around, and there was areas to ride. And my backyard was literally out the back door. And I know, so much has changed since the 70s when I was a kid. You can't ride a dirt bike out of your neighborhood these days. So it's tough, and it's just something that the motorsports industry is facing.
Final thing, pushing for the 8th championship this year, the record breaker. Is there something different about the pursuit this year as compared to previous years, given the historic nature of the accomplishment? Or is it, the same type of process that you're normally on at this time going into New Hampshire?
No, every year is different. This year has had its own challenges, a new format that's kind of playing out as well. It does remind me a lot of last season where we had the summer slump and then got hot in the postseason. So I'm certainly hoping for more of the same. We'll see how it plays out, but it's been a very challenging year and a very competitive year throughout the garage area.
Jimmy, good to see you.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks.
To see you.
All right, that is 7-time NASCAR champion Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Larson, and Kyle Busch prior to that. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. When we return, hit the road last week, spent some time with the Red Sox ahead of them clinching the division in the American League East. Xander Bogaerts, Drew Pomeranz are up next. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Headed down to Baltimore to catch up with the Boston Red Sox. They continue to roll. They swept that series from the Orioles, then swept the next series from the Cincinnati Reds, and are set to head to the postseason, the division series, beginning next week. Xander Bogaerts looks to play a key role for the Red Sox in the postseason. He's feeling much healthier than at any other point of the season, and we caught up with him inside the visitor's dugout at Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
Honored to be joined by Xander Bogaerts, Red Sox shortstop, as we gear up for the postseason, wind up the regular season. Red Sox been playing amazing baseball, Bogey, where you guys, on a night-in, night-out basis, seems like you look at the scoreboard, the Yankees are winning, And you guys find a way to win. And talk about what you think this is going to mean for this team moving forward, the way that you guys have been able to consistently find ways to win ball games under significant pressure.
It's important right now. Every game matters. Every game is important. Regardless if the other teams win or lose, especially the Yankees, they're right behind us. They're also playing good baseball, so we know we got to be on point. We got to bring our A game every single game, and it's fun. It's fun playing under that type of pressure that you got to be good.
And you look at this team this year, and one of the main differences is that this team seems like it's a little grittier this year. You guys up and down the lineup have great at bats late in games, place pressure on the opposition. Zach Britton was talking about that this year. It seems like this team is a lot more difficult to play against from an offensive perspective than last year, despite the fact that you get the traditional statistics and your numbers aren't the same up and down the lineup.
We just got to find ways to win. We know we're not a team that's built on the long ball like these guys. Yesterday, they had 1 through 7. Each of them have 20-plus home runs in their lineup, and we don't have that type of guys over here. But the one thing we know we can do is get on base a lot, create a lot of opportunities with runs in scoring position. Hopefully someone gets a big knock, you know, get a few runs in. The other day we had Mookie clear the bases. So that's what we're built off, you know, just creating opportunities and hopefully we get the right guy at the right time.
Do you feel like the team is getting more big hits this year, whether it's you or other guys, than in the past? Is the young core getting, you know, more big hits and having better at-bats this year than last year?
I would say so, yeah, because last year we mostly counted on David, you know.
Right.
David was that guy that the game is tied in the 7, 8, or 9. You know, he's going to be the guy that's going to cash in and tie it up or go ahead, you know. But he's not here this year, so we got a lot of different guys stepping up. Hopefully we can continue doing that and clinch a spot in the playoff berth because we know it's pretty tight.
One of the things as well that really seems to jump out is that the bullpen is built for success this postseason, where you have arm after arm after arm, and this team's 15-3 in extra inning games, and obviously you guys on the offensive side, your defense is a big part of it, but it feels like the bullpen is the biggest reason that you guys are 15-3. Now with David Price out there as well, it seems like there's a lot of weapons, and if you look at who wins championships, it's teams with a lot of weapons out of the bullpen.
Yeah, we have a lot of guys that you can bring them in. Righties can get lefties out, lefties can get righties out, vice versa, you know. I mean, just guys that are doing a great job for us this year are getting Reed at the deadline. He's been good, especially as of late. Mm-hmm. Maddox also. Mm-hmm. Workman, the younger guys, you know. David Price, I mean, he's obviously a Cy Young, so you can pretty much count on what you're going to get from him. I know it's a different role for him in the bullpen, but he's done it before, so he's a guy that got a lot of experience, you know, and you should have a lot of trust in someone like that.
When you look at the year for you, obviously you're dealing with a hand injury. You could tell that for a long period of time. You're having difficulty, you know, looking like the bogey that we know and pulling the ball and getting, you know, that jump off the bat. It seems like that's returned. And what do you think that says moving forward?
I mean, I've been feeling good a few weeks now. I've been swinging a lot more at that inside pitch. I could never have swung at it before. Couldn't turn on it. Used to always take it and stuff like that. You know, now I'm getting a little bit more balls in the air. Mm-hmm. All I was doing was hitting ground balls to short, ground balls to third. You know, I couldn't stay through the ball. It was hard. You know, it's been hard for me playing through that, but I wanted to be on the field. You know, especially in times like this. You know, every game is important. Although you're not at your best, but hopefully you can still have some value for your team.
Did you feel like that was affecting you, you know, overall outside of just at the plate?
I've had a few games where I had a few throwing errors that would have something with the hand, but no, mostly my hitting, man. I could not have, without looking at data or anything like that, I would probably say I've been pulling a lot more balls less in the air this year. I mean, no one has to tell me that because that's what I know. It's just been different, you know. I couldn't do the stuff that I'm normally used to do, accustomed of doing, but I just wanted to play through it, you know. And I know next year I'll be back where I want to be if I'm healthy again.
It seems like this team's identity this year is, you know, a kind of a win-at-all-costs, gritty-type team, which I thought was really on display in the win on Tuesday night. You win without getting, you know, an RBI in the game. You're diving into first base. Jackie's going over the wall. And that's seems to be kind of the identity of this team. It's kind of a scratch claw, yeah. You know, find a way to win. And you're going to go into the postseason, hopefully. And, you know, in the postseason, the Red Sox are not going to be the favorites. And I think that it all kind of plays into your hands this year.
Yeah, you know, underdog. Essentially, we don't know who we're going to match up with yet. It'll come down to these last few weeks of baseball, you know. Hopefully we just ride a hot hand into the postseason. You know, last year we were losing a lot of games toward the end. Hopefully this year it switched around. You know, hopefully we're winning mostly at the end and carry that momentum, carry that confidence from the whole team until the postseason.
Final thing, has this been your most challenging season because of, you know, the injury? And, you know, you've been hit really well with runners in scoring position, but, you know, obviously each player wants to, you know, continue that march forward and have a better year, you know, this year than the one previous and so forth. Has this been your most challenging season?
I mean, 2014 was definitely a very challenging, but I was still young, you know, and I was learning and stuff like that. But this year, knowing the type of player that I am, know what I'm capable of, and dealing with the stuff that I've been dealing. So I understand that I would not be able to play at my abilities. And I was fine with that, you know, because it was tough, man. It was tough being out there and not being able to be who you are. But the one thing you have to do is remember who you are. And, you know, once you're healthy, you know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to do. As I said, you know what you're capable of when you're 100%.
Bogey, thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Xander Bogaerts right there. Also caught up with Red Sox starter Drew Pomeranz as Pomeranz set to get that number two start in the division series.
Drew Pomeranz has been flat out awesome for the Red Sox this year. Having him in the rotation has been one of the big keys that has the Red Sox where they are right now. Certainly, you know, you look at the Red Sox, their work in extra innings has been fabulous. Their bullpen has been fabulous. Defense has been very, very good. The offense has been different this year, but opportunistic, and also does a great job with runners in scoring position. But the Red Sox starting rotation has not been exactly what expected. David Price has been injured for the majority of this year. Rick Porcello has not had a season to match his year of last year when he won the Cy Young. Stephen Wright was slotted to be in the rotation. He has been hurt. Eduardo Rodriguez has been inconsistent and also dealt with injuries. And it has been incredibly important for the Red Sox to have the output that they have gotten from Drew Pomeranz on a start-in, start-out basis. I talked with the Red Sox starter here in Baltimore, Camden Yards.
Joined by Red Sox pitcher Drew Pomeranz, has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year, 16-5, 3.15 ERA, coming off another strong performance here against the Baltimore Orioles. How are you feeling, you know, this late into the year, strength-wise, and obviously gearing up towards a significant role in the postseason?
I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good with my mechanics and, you know, pretty much all four pitches at this point in the year. You know, I'm probably going to throw more innings than I have, you know, in the past. So I've really just been focused on just being consistent with my mechanics this late in the year, and everything's, you know, it's been coming out pretty good.
Each pitcher, you know, any player for that matter, talks about wanting to be consistent, but your consistency has been flat out remarkable. I mean, you could pencil in anywhere between 6 and 7 innings and somewhere between 0 and 3 runs per game, mostly on the low side, every single contest. How have you done that?
Just try to take the simple approach. You know, I try not to complicate things too much, and I just take it pitch by pitch. And, you know, me and Vasquez and the coaches sit down with a game plan before the game, and you know, Vasquez's so good back there at knowing me and knowing what I need to throw to these guys. And, you know, we communicate really well as far as mixing things up. And, you know, I think a large, yeah, that's a large part of it. You know, it's the, you know, the relationship you build with your catcher is, you know, I feel really comfortable with where I'm at when he's back there and, you know, what signs he's calling and, you know, how we're feeling.
And it seems like, you know, when you do make mistakes, and if you do make mistakes, A, they're limited, and B, you don't really, you know, have to pay for them during the course of the game. And that's obviously the optimal situation. If you do make a mistake, you know, you could have Jackie Bradley Jr. go over the wall and make a catch for you.
Yeah, this, the defense on this team is amazing. You know, just talking before I came out here, and, you know, it's all our outfielders are going to catch everything. They're gonna throw guys out on any play because they all have great arms, and all our infielders are, you know, they do such a great job out there too. It's like there's really no holes, you know, that you can point out defensively. And, you know, and then you got Vasquez and Sandy back there who throw everyone out basically. And you know, it makes things a lot easier for us pitchers to just go out there and throw strikes when we got those kind of guys behind us.
That's a really good point because, you know, it allows you to be comfortable. I mean, you can be comfortable and you can be you because you know the Vasquez is going to block any ball that you put in the dirt. He's going to make good decisions as to what to throw. Your fielders are going to make plays, and your bullpen is going to come in and, you know, hold the line. So in other teams, obviously, you have to worry about a bunch of different other factors that are external. But on this team, it seems like the external factors outside of your performance are completely limited.
Yeah. You know, like I said, these guys are, you know, they're really good. We got a really good team. You know, they're all very smart baseball players, and you know, they're very aware of situations and what's going on, and they stay locked in all the time. So, you know, that's just makes you feel so comfortable out there on the mound, just knowing those guys have your back.
I'm curious about your thoughts on the offense. The conventional wisdom has been that this offense is not as good as last year based upon the home run numbers dipping, David Ortiz not being there. But talking to some of the guys on the Orioles side, they think that this offense is actually more difficult to play against this year because of The way this team grinds at bats, the way they take the extra base, and how the team hits with runners in scoring position. From your perspective as a pitcher, do you see this offense being more potent, and would you rather pitch against a team like, say, the Orioles that have a lot of home run hitters in the lineup, or the guys that are going to create long at bats and to take an extra base, potentially steal?
Yeah, you know, it's not like last year. You could say, you know how we're going to beat you. You know, we're going to come out there, we're going to hit a bunch of home runs and just put up a bunch of runs on the board. But the thing about this year is you don't know how we can beat teams in so many different ways that, you know, it makes us hard. You know, we're pesky at the plate, see a lot of pitches. You know, our base runners are taking extra bases here and there, and, you know, moving up to third, you know, when, you know, maybe another guy wouldn't be, and it puts us in a good position to to score runs. And that's, you know, it's like I said, we just have such a, that's part of just the baseball smarts. We have such a baseball smart team. Like, everyone's just doing the little things each and every time out there.
In concluding, you know, the Yankees have given this team a lot of pressure down the stretch of the season, and, you know, their start times have something to do with it. It seems like, you know, each game you look up at the scoreboard, the Yankees are winning or they've won, and the Red Sox are forced to respond. How much do you think that pressure is going to be, you know, beneficial down the stretch and into the postseason?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much scoreboard watching we actually do. You know, we're out there every night just trying to do our job, regardless of whatever else is going on around the league. You know, we know that every game's important. We're going out there trying to win every game, not giving anything away. I mean, you see us down 6 runs or whatever the other night, and we came back and, you know, we win the game. You know, everyone's just really locked in on finishing this year strong.
Drew Pomerantz right there. It's going to be a really interesting Cy Young Award battle between Chris Sale and Corey Kluber of the Cleveland Indians, and both of them, you know, look to match up probably at some point here during the postseason if everything breaks right. Jim Palmer is one of the great pitchers of all time, and his success in the regular season correlated to the postseason. We talked with him about what he's seen from Chris Sale.
What have you seen from Chris Sale, and how does he kind of mesh with, you know, guys like you who are the top of the pitching staff type guys?
Well, he's real good. You know, he got 3 above average pitches. You know, very, you know, deceptive windup. You know, throw slider, fastball, change up in any count. Great heart. Probably tried to do a little bit too much early. I mean, you know, because you come to new ball, you know, you're a number one guy. You know, even though Porcello won the Cy Young Award, and, you know, Chris Price was hurt early on. So, but, yeah, about as good as he comes. You know, I guess the question is maybe not as good lately as he was early, but, you know, maybe they'll back him off a couple of innings. Because, you know, I was talking to Carl Willis, his pitching coach, and he was talking about most of the innings, with the exception of maybe 10, 11, 12 over, you know, over 200 innings have been stressful ones. So, you know, maybe they'll actually get a big lead or whatever, and they'll be able to actually, you know, maybe, you know, monitor his pitch counts until they get to the playoffs.
What's the commonality that you see mentally between guys like yourself and Pedro and Sale, regardless of your generation or time that's being played?
Well, they like to compete. You know, they're usually guys that work hard, that are extremely talented. You know, Pedro, like Clemens, myself, and Carlton, and Gibson, and Seaver, and, you know, all the great pitchers, Catfish Hunter, all the guys, you know, Gaylord Perry, we didn't like to give up runs. So I look at Chris Sale and I'm going, you know, he wants to pitch as long as he can, as well as he can. And, you know, the last, what, 6 starts haven't been as good as the previous, but he still pitched all right. I was looking at the numbers and I'm going, you know, maybe a few more runner and scoring position numbers and things like that, and they've been able to get base hits, but, you know, they're not hitting the ball any harder now than they did early in the year. Maybe not striking out as many guys, and that, you know, strikeouts, nobody does anything. So, but still, as long as he feels good, I think he'll be ready for the playoffs.
He hasn't shook off Sandy Leon once this year, and that's something that goes back to Chicago as well. Is that something that you could have ever seen yourself doing, just kind of give you over complete control to the catcher to put down what he's going to put down and just throw it?
Well, you know, they obviously have a good rapport. I mean, Johnny Oates, the late Johnny Oates, before he went off to Atlanta, I was 10-0 with him. And, you know, he'd pride himself into watching pitches and knowing the guys he was catching, and I'm sure Sandy feels the same way. So, you know, again, I mean, it's trust. You know, both of the catchers, both Vasquez and Leon, throw well. you know, Sandy's not having the kind of offensive year, but at the end of the day, when they put the fingers down, it's very refreshing in the late innings, you know, in a stress clutch situation to see the right figure down there.
Final thing, you're, in addition to being great regular season pitcher, one of the great postseason pitchers as well, and numbers actually better in the postseason than regular season. Sales never pitched in the postseason before. Is there a difference for a guy, or are they able to harness what they do into the regular season and progress to the postseason?
Well, and you know, it's no different unless, nice, you know, the games may be more meaningful, but unless you make it different, you know, grip pressure, if you're any good, you know how to relax. You know, I think there have been a lot of big games for Chris Sale over the course of his career. Maybe not in the postseason, but, you know, I think once you get out there, the nerves calm down, you know, the apprehension. I don't care how good you are, you're always a little apprehensive because you don't know what's going to happen.
This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center.
Not even close to all right.